SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Crown Monday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And go back a few years, particularly after California Chrome, there'll never be another Triple Crown winner. Never happen again. Oh, never happen again. And 12 months later, there was a Triple Crown winner. And then 3 years later comes another. And Saturday has so many undertones and overtones and in-between tones that it's hard to even grasp all the elements. And I just put out a little preview tweet for the day. And I called it day one. And whenever we come back from Triple Crown weekends, Breeders' Cup weekend, it always takes several days to absorb everything that went on. Obviously, with the rest of the Grade 1 stakes laden Saturday and the lead up Thursday and Friday, and not to mention racing that goes around the rest of North America, there's always so much to absorb. This particular achievement is not going to easily be appreciated, I think. And I think I said Saturday night when I finally got a chance, A, to recharge the phone, and B, to try to say something that encapsulated the experience on Saturday, the culmination of Saturday. I said that it might take a while to comprehend what Justify and the team behind him and the jockey astride him accomplished. Because the remarkably short period of time in which this horse had to come to hand, break a maiden, earn his way to Churchill to participate in the Derby, just that alone was stunning. And we were told for weeks leading in between the Santa Anita Derby and Kentucky Derby, we were told that, well, the unraced two-year-old and all of that. And in 2 minutes and 3 seconds, that evaporated and on to Baltimore and through a performance on a sodden surface that put kind of a fog as to Justify's capabilities and qualities into Saturday, where he, I think for many that anticipated what he brought to that particular racetrack, did exactly what made the most sense, which was to just gallop foes into submission. And I think I used those words. I mean, that is what felt like the most logical approach and outcome. And that's what you got. And obviously, there's lots of smoke and incendiary kinds of suggestions. And I think in very quickly it will be dismissed and should be, because ultimately you put horses into gates, they open, and cue chaos. And in a lot of ways, the gates opening and some horses not breaking well and others careening into others and so forth, that happened yesterday at every racetrack in the country, and it will continue to happen. The horses rushed into contention and everything else that we see every day. But there's a lot of this performance that you can appreciate. The most important element is that this is a horse that has accomplished something unique in the annals of this gauntlet of the three races in 5 weeks. There's really no practical there's no practical comparison. The averaging a race every 19 days, 18 and a half days, it's a unique accomplishment. And we won't know, you know, how great or ordinary the foes were in retrospect for a while. You know, people, one of my favorite parts of this is going into the Derby, what a great crop. And then Justify sweeps the crown events, and it's what a terrible crop. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. This, for me, this was a head shaking, just an accomplishment. And as much as I thought that he was overwhelmingly likely, you still have the you know, the creeping the butterflies and the doubts that are reasonable and appropriate. You know, wondering if things catch up to him. You know, then of course there's just the whole element of how the race unfolds and what transpires there. And in terms of the race unfolding, and obviously over the next couple of days we'll have plenty of people to talk about it, including Andy Beyer in this hour, who I do not think was impressed. I got a text from Andy coming back yesterday afternoon, and Andy doesn't strike me as somebody you send LOLs to, but I did, and I said I had a feeling that this was coming. You know, a 101 buyer in terms of figure, and Justify, when you put a line through his wet track performances, suddenly you say to yourself, oh, he's better on a dry, fast track. Almost all horses are better on fast, dry tracks. It's not that certain horses, yeah, there is the occasional horse that absolutely is literally a mudlark who loves the footing and legitimately moves up. But most typically, conditions of a wet track eliminate a certain percentage of the field, and those that handle it at all succeed. And that may be what is part of this Justify makeup. We'll get Andy's opinion. We'll have Johnny D as well. Bob Baffert at the end of the show, as usual, the 11:30 slot has been a major residence, actually, for Baffert over the years. And he looked, Baffert in particular, looked, and really the whole team in some ways, I think, looked more relaxed and more like they enjoyed this more even than they did. Not to compare and contrast the two Triple Crowns, an achievement that that puts Baffert, who's already in the elitist, in the most elite company in training history, it puts him in a dead heat with Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons. It's just that whole that you know that part of this. We talked about it last week. How many historic parameters were involved through these 5 weeks? But I to get back to the theme of the opening here, the need for and what will be a growing appreciation, no matter what comes next, and you know, for the we're in the same exact Monday seat that we were with American Pharoah, where there was the you know the cacophony of he'll never race again, he'll be retired. Same exact scenario where those involved very much looking forward to you know, continuing on through the year. So I'm sure at some point this week we'll get a little bit more news on the Coolmore portion of this equation and their long-term breeding plans and you know interceding and I'm sure you know they get a say. But as of yesterday, the expectation is that he'll continue to campaign. But for me, the thing that I think everybody wants to and needs to do is wait and watch what happens as we see this performance and this series of performances through a you know a prism of history down the road. You're going to look back and understand that this was so improbable, so ridiculous that a horse did this. Showed up in February and proceeded to win six straight. And even though we kind of think of it as and look at it and think he really, you know, nothing, there was no issues, there was the little post-derby hoof hiccup. But assuming we all get to spend a few more years around the planet and that we've got years to enjoy this game and this sacrosanct set of races, I think we're all going to realize at some point down the road this was an incredible, unparalleled accomplishment. We'll talk to one of the people that in particular made it possible, John Gunther. Been looking forward to this. And I would have felt bad if I tell you, it's one of those things you balance. Do we bring John Gunther in last week or between the Preakness and the Belmont? What if he gets beat? No, I'm very glad that we get a chance to talk to John back in Vancouver. And he's been in the game a long time and has had his own successes of horses he campaigned, but he and daughter Tanya enjoying this incredible year as breeders and looking forward to John's reflection. He was actually just sitting a few rows in front of us, Tina and I, on Saturday, and he was relaxed and you could tell he just was kind of soaking it all in, creating a horse that was in this position and then capitalized on the opportunity. Bob Baffert, of course, I don't know what to say. Baffert with an amazing Saturday. Abel Tasman, as the Clocker Report indicated, was coming around, and she was tremendous opportunity we got to talk about, too. And as Nick Tamaro, Nick had a fabulous, we had so proud of everybody that comes through and gives you their opinions and helps you win. And a lot of people won, and delighted for that. How about B Jersey? We'll do some of that kind of stuff after the break. Getting going. Triple Crown post at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a two-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's my heat seeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The conqueror in this case, Justify. I got a couple of questions already about the day, and to give you the overview from that perspective. Number one, the people that were worried for the weather circumstance, you ended up with as glorious a day as you could have wanted. It was absolutely perfect. And in fact, as the afternoon wore on, it cooled off. It was warm. It was warm for a good portion of the afternoon. It was absolutely perfect. The backyard, it was sunny and warm, and everybody was in just great spirits on that front. That helps you to begin with. The fear that it was going to be we're going to have another, no, that went away. And then in terms of the building and early on the apron, it seemed to me that things filled up even earlier, even though I'm going to guess there were a handful. I didn't even hear a final. I'm assuming they're, you know, saying there was, you know, 89,903, but I didn't see a number. But it was, you know, from that standpoint, excellent. The lines and you know, they ran out. I'm hearing stories they ran out of some water and they ran out of some food here and there. But I think overall, you know, considering how difficult it is to manage, you know, when you have the facility that is only going to have that crowd, you know, once a year, and only once a year if it's under these circumstances. But it's hard to compare. I said to Baffert later on Saturday night, and we went over to King Umberto's to close out the 10-day run. And I got to tell you, if you're wondering, for those of you that are wondering, another question: the brujol was unbelievable. The pork brujol that I helped manage and create with Pietro and Rosario at King Umberto's. But Bob Baffert and company, they had their party in the party room at King Umberto's. And I said to Bob, I think the cheer was louder than Pharaoh. He said, no, not louder than Pharaoh. It wasn't louder than Pharaoh. I don't know. Maybe it was just where I was standing. And I pretty much stood in the same spot to watch the race as I did 3 years ago. And I told you I wore the same suit. I think I got the new tie though. But I guess this is now the Triple Crown suit. I guess I only wear it, right? This will be how I can measure if I'm gaining weight over the years. As long as I can still fit in that suit. That'll be the that'll be the measuring stick. That's possible. It was, as we've said after American Pharoah, particularly that outcome, the win by the horse going for the Triple Crown, having been at so many attempts that, you know, that fell short. Everybody leaves. The majority of people leave, vast majority, you know, gleeful. And that was, I think, the case on Saturday. And even some people who may have been disappointed with certain outcomes over the day in particular, there's a lot over the 72 hours, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, really, to pull together. But, you know, even in defeat, a few people should be absolutely thrilled, not the least of which is Chad Brown. Sending out Gronkowski and that performance, he broke terribly. And you know, these Euros, every single, it's a theme that gets repeated all the time. That takes the European horse longer for whatever, should get Bob Duncan on, and maybe Duncan can explain this, the great gatesman. The Euros come and they invariably, no matter how much they're schooled, I don't know what, it's remarkable. They just don't break as sharp. But otherwise, I mean, everything that Chad Brown had hinted at, and you could tell that, you know, Chad Brown, over the course of a month, got a chance to watch this horse, and Mike Welch told you how well he was working and seemingly getting over the dirt. You know, it's different afternoon from the morning, but Gronkowski's performance was absolutely tremendous. And as Chad Brown concluded afterward, you know, he's excited to have a nice horse like this going forward. Hofberg, steady advance, never really, he kind of loomed for a moment. Vino Rosso proved to be a little one-paced in here. And that was something of a surprise. Tenfold had, you know, kind of that, there was that, those early strides where Restoring Hope, who broke poorly and then rushed up, and those that are criticizing Florent Giroux, I don't get it. I watched this morning head on, pan, broke poorly. The assignment was, you know, get, if you get the lead, fine, and Justify will stalk you. If you can't make the lead, you know, be in forward position. And that's what Giroux did. And you could tell that, you know, when he asked for the burst and Restoring Hope, it looked plenty hard to handle. And, you know, then once he, you know, once he got him in the clear, you know, angled him over to the stalking role. And like anybody that wanted to go with Justify ended up in the back half of the chart. And, you know, Nobilindi, who it became obvious, and I guess Castellano coming under criticism for not following, you know, the plan that Mike Rapoli and Todd Pletcher laid out. But Nobilindi couldn't keep up. How was he supposed to get to the lead if he couldn't keep up in the opening stages? But he chased and faded, and Restoring Hope, and the same thing. Bravazo was third early, ended up, you know, beaten 8, 9, 10 lengths. You look at a chart like this, it's pretty easy. When you see a horse that was 10th finish second, beaten a couple of lengths, and you see a horse that was 8th early and finished 3rd, beaten 4 lengths, it tells you a lot about what you just saw. And that is the Justify's steady pace, 23-1, 24-4. That middle half mile, the middle half mile was key. 24-4, 25-1, but then right back to 24-4, 24-4, 25-1. I mean, this was a faster race early than people are giving Justify credit for. You know, those that seem intent on trying to, you know, explain. I guess Andy, I think Beyer may take this tack too, but I don't know. 23-1 in a Belmont. In an opening quarter for Belmont? Okay. That's not fast enough for people to you know, get horses immediately on the defensive, and then the horse reels off what averages out to, you know, 24-4 quarters all the way around. And that was the blueprint. So I Nobilindi could have gotten up to the front. The Restoring Hope could have, whoever else, anybody that wanted to run with him, they would have had to have gone faster than that. And I don't see how there's a different outcome, to be honest. So, but I can't say enough. Gronkowski was tremendous with that performance. And, you know, working backwards, we're going to talk to Graham Motion, who won a Manhattan again. Second year in a row. Last year it was Ascend. And for every, you know, there's a couple of stories that we're going to tell today. You know, one is with Grand Motion and with Spring Quality. It was a big day for Quality Road, because of course Abel Tasman by Quality Road as well. And Quality Road had another stake winner over the weekend too, or maybe more. I saw Quality Road's name a bunch of times, but Edgar Prado. That was like a remarkable ride. As great a ride as you're ever going to see in a race like that. And here's a horse who's been attending paces. I picked him fourth, and thank God I used him. I almost shrugged him off, but I thought, you know, he's going to at least get a chance to stalk from the outside, and I mean, that was remarkable what he did here. And the horse has been attending paces, and yet Edgar drops out of it with him, gets to the inside, saves all the ground, fans out 7 wide. I mean, this was a unbelievable performance from a Hall of Fame jock who, you know, let's be honest. I mean, to use a Gary Youngism, the other side of midnight. That's not news. This was an unbelievable performance. And we're going to bring Tim Keefe in because maybe the best, in some ways, the best story of the whole Saturday came with the other three-year-old race for boys. Not that the Belmont has to be confined to the boys, but still having fun. And this was, it's funny, the day was going along well enough, and still having fun's win in the Woody Stevens just ignited the rest of the day. And it was absolutely one of those wins at the track under a big spotlight that brings smiles to everybody's faces, that anybody of any, you know, certainly the Mid-Atlantic people. And in particular, it's funny, Gabby Gaudette and Maggie Wolfendale, I happened to see them right after the race, and the Clancys and anybody else that knows Mid-Atlantic racing was just ecstatic for Tim Keefe. And we talked late last week into the fifth game of the Stanley Cup Finals about Arnie Heft, and the late Arnie Heft, who, of course, co-owned the Capitals, who named a horse for a too fast a catch for Ovechkin. And I happened to send a text after the Stanley Cup win to Tim Keefe and said, you know, thinking about you, Arnie, and Sylvia, and what this must mean. And I said, maybe I'd love to get you to talk about it, but let's save it for Monday. Tim, it's Monday. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been obviously very exciting, and I appreciate you having me on today.
Not at all. And the beaming smile, not just from you, but your staff, and of course Gary Barber and the partners. There was so much about this that is textbook horsemanship and textbook three-year-old management. You test the waters with your three-year-old for classic distance. You evaluate where they stand, and then you bring them back to what they do best. And it worked to an absolute perfection on Saturday.
It did. It is nice, obviously, when things work out. And, you know, a trainer can't do that unless they have the support from the owner. So I appreciate Jimmy and Gary and Adam for, for being patient and letting me do what we all thought was probably in the best interest of the horse. So, you know, we thought he was a nice horse. Obviously, Gary and Adam liked the horse, thought he was a nice horse after his maiden win, decided to buy in. We worked out a deal, and our ultimate goal was obviously to see if he was good enough to go two turns and perhaps make the Preakness. And, you know, we tried, we went slow with him. We took our time. We did kinds of baby steps with him. But, you know, ultimately he told us he was a closing sprinter, 7/8, maybe a one turn mile. And so that's what we went back to. But, you know, ultimately you really can't do it. I can't do my job unless I get the support from the great support that I have from all of my owners, including the three here that own this guy. So I'm very appreciative of that.
Well, we're going to talk later to John Gunther about breeding, you know, his portion of the story with Justify. And, of course, you're on the breeding line as well when it comes to, you know, this old-fashioned colt. We talked about that, you know, back to the Miracle Wood, or maybe it was after the Whiteley. But this assignment coming out of the Chick Lang, when you chased Mitoli, who's actually going to be sidelined with a splint problem, and you flattered him, and everybody acknowledges that he's going to be the leader of the division sprinting, but it really felt like you turning back to the 7/8, or in this case stretching out from 6 to 7, and the pace that was going to set up in this race, it really gave you the opportunity. You added Joel Rosario, who's kind of perfectly suited to this, you know, this style. You know, talk about the plan coming in.
Well, the plan after the Federico Tessio, when it was obvious we weren't going to go two turns, we weren't going to stretch him out, was to go back to Preakness Day, and that's why we took that route. So we, you know, win, lose, or draw with a Federico Tessio, we would still have an opportunity on Preakness Day, which really made the most sense for a lot of reasons. You know, he was close to home. He's still the Maryland bred, and we can still, you know, fairly keep him in his environment. The Federico Tessio didn't work out, so we decided to sprint him. At Pimlico, going three quarters, I knew he was going to have his work cut out for him. But, you know, Sheldon rode a great race there with the horse. And, you know, I told Steve Asmussen, I saw him at Timonium. He doesn't know who I am, but, you know, I know who he is. And I went up to him and introduced myself and told him, I said, I felt like a winner in a Chick Lang chasing your horse, finishing second. And he laughed. He said, yeah, he said, Natoli's, I think he said he's a freak. You know, he's that good. So, you know, I knew going into it, that horse had good form. We were going to really have to run, especially going to three quarters, because I think we're better going 7/8 to a mile. So I was thrilled with the Chick Lang, and that really solidified our decision, or our ticket, I guess you could say, to come up here to the Belmont and at least try him here in the Woody Stevens. So we were all thrilled after that race. Finishing second to Steve's horse, we were thrilled.
Put you into the scene for, you know, the kinds of horses and those that are going to obviously point for the most obvious opportunity for this division, the Alan Jerkins at Saratoga. But bring us around as you watch the race unfold. You saw 21 and change go up, and then a insane 43-3, and you had to like your chances because I was watching him too, and I saw where he was sitting, and he was, you know, free and clear for his run.
He was free and clear, and you know, I spoke to Joel before the race. I spoke to him on Friday, and you know, he and Ron brought him by the barn. So we shipped up Thursday. Had a great ship. Bill Mott was fortunate, or I was fortunate enough that Bill Mott gave us the opportunity to stay in his stall. We had a stall in Bill's barn. Friday, we took him to the paddock, trained him on the track, and Friday after training, I asked Ron to bring Joel by just so I'd have the opportunity to meet him and chat with him briefly, and he did. You know, I talked to him and told him, I said, listen, this horse will go inside, he'll go outside. He's just, don't be impatient with him. He's a closing sprinter. He'll be far back, but don't give him too much to do. But you know, he's not going to be anywhere near the lead. Joel, I guess he's watched some of the races. He'd seen how the horse runs, and he has seen how the horse closed. So he was genuinely excited about riding the horse. When the gates opened, I kind of knew where we were going to be. We had one beat. I was a little bit, you know, seemed like we were far back, 11 lengths. I guess I counted them up around 11.
Okay. Yeah. Did we lose him? Case? I guess we lost him. Yeah, he's going to pick up and see if you... That was a drop without warning either. Tim had to be... When that 43 went, I mean, that was just unbelievable. When they turned for home, too. Notable that Rosario stayed left-handed with him too, because he was wanting to. There's Tim back. I was just saying, Tim, when they straightened, you were, you know, talking about you know, being 10, 11 lengths back, but that 43 goes up and then 108 and change, and now, you know, now Joel's in full gear.
And full gear on the outside and charging. And that's what this horse likes to do, is that last quarter of a mile. He's got a great kick. He's got that desire, as I've always talked about, some horses have and a lot of horses don't. He just has that desire to want to get there first. And he just kept on going. And, man, it was exciting. And as I said after the race, it just seemed that last eighth of a mile to me, it just seemed like it was in slow motion. And, you know, and then obviously when I looked up and went 121 and change, there was no slow motion about that. But it just really seems surreal to me to watch my horse, this little Maryland bred, come flying by on the outside. And, yeah, it was just exciting for me, obviously. You know, the highlight of my career so far. It was great.
Well, and I was going to mention first graded stake win. One thing, as we were waiting for Case to get you back, very notable, he looked like he wanted to lug in, and Joel kept at him left-handed and was trying to, with his right hand, was trying to make sure that he maintained as much of a straight-going course late as possible.
Yeah, he'll do that a little bit too, and he doesn't. He, you know, it said lug in last time in this chart at Pimlico. He's not lugging in. What he does, he just kind of lean. Wants to lean on a horse a little
yep.
bit. Yeah, he's still a colt. He's still a little playful. He's still kind of like, you know, I kind of gotcha. You know, he's just not. He's not doing anything. He's just being playful. I guess that's maybe not the right word, but he's just. You know, he's not maybe lugging in. He's just instead of just focusing and doing his business, he's kind of got to throw a little antic in there, I guess, once in a while, but. you know, that's part of him, and he's always been like that. And, you know, I posted a few pictures. I sent a few pictures to my wife of him. You know, he loves to lie down in his stall. He loves to just hang out. Nothing gets under his skin. And that's one of the things we found out about him shipping to Pimlico on Preakness Day is, you know, albeit it was only a 50-minute trip from Laurel to Pimlico, but to be there on Preakness Day with the infield and the rock bands and everything, it is it, for some horses, it absolutely turns them inside out in the receiving barn waiting for the race. With just the racket and the noise and the crowds and everything. And he handled it like it was not a big deal. So I really felt moving into up to Belmont on Belmont Day, it, again, it's a huge day up there as well. I felt like he would handle it, and he did. He just, this one great attribute about this horse is he's just very laid back. He's very nonchalant. He's, you know, he just doesn't get intimidated by anything. So that's a pretty neat attribute for a racehorse to have.
Yeah, very much. And I've told the story many times with Tim Ice, and Summer Bird being at Derby, and they had Summer Bird and Tim in one of the two, you know, Derby ship-in barns, and he was the last stall facing Longfield Avenue. And after he worked early one morning, I went to see Tim Ice, and the horse is laying down, Tim, with his head under the webbing, looking out, watching the horses being walked. I've never seen that. And I said, I remember saying to Mice, I said, what is with this? He says, oh, he says, no, he it's ridiculous. And it's when you see a horse that'll lie down and know to take care of himself and stay relaxed and not in the fret in the stall, you know you've got something.
Yeah, he's exactly right. Unfortunately,
amazing.
We have that in this horse. So we have the three S's. I have an owner that calls them three S's: soundness, speed, and sensibility. And he's got, if you have a horse with all three of those, the three S's, you know, you probably have a pretty decent horse. And this horse has all three S's, as Cynthia McGinnis always says.
I love it. Well, speaking of speed, and we know you'll be pointing for the Alan Jerkins at Saratoga, but I'm not letting this end without your feelings, specifically Eight Too Fast to Catch, Arnie and Sylvia Heft, the odyssey of watching the Capitals. And I guess in a lot of ways, Tim, this had to be the greatest 5, 6, 7 days of, you know, of your career and life.
There's no question. And, you know, I don't know if everybody knows the connection with Arnie, but, you know, real quick, you know, I bought the mare of this horse for Arnie, Casual Kiss. I bought her as a yearling for Arnold at Timonium from Cynthia McGinnis. She was lightning fast. She showed like she had some talent, but long story short, I could never get her to the races and keep her sound. So the time came, Arnold said, listen, as he always did, Arnold was a great man. He, you know, he loved his horses, he loved racing, loved sports, really always took care of his horses. So find her a home. I gave her back to Cynthia McGinnis. She was thrilled. She wanted to have her as a broodmare, put her back into a broodmare line, or put her into a broodmare line. Arnie passed away, and as a thank you, Cynthia told me, to me, she would, for getting the mare back, she would put me down as co-breeder on everything that this mare threw. You know, nobody knew she was going to be as good as maybe she's going to be, but... that's the connection, and you know, I always seem to have Arnie with me, and I'm very fortunate to have all the owners that I have, but he's the first owner probably that really kind of started setting me up. So he was a great man. He had a lot of wisdom, and he was just a wonderful, wonderful man that I will never forget. So.
Well, it is certainly a harmony to seeing Ovechkin raise the Stanley Cup. And Eight Too Fast to Catch, and then you bring,
this horse. Eight Too Fast to Catch, I still have back at my farm. Yeah, you know, my wife competed them. My older daughter's competing them, and now my younger daughter, who's 11, going on 12, she's competing them now too. So he's just been another. You know, we've talked about him quite a bit, but he's just another story. But that's another Arnold Heft connection.
Tremendous. Well, Tim Keefe, just so tickled, and I can tell from a couple of posts you've had at Facebook. You've also got the new website, which I'll mention, but you can tell just how really overwhelmed and humbled you've been by how many people, you know what a good job you do, and are so happy for you to have this success and on such a big stage.
Yep. Well, thank you. And again, it takes a lot of us to get here, so can't forget all the guys back at the barn that are just working nonstop day in, day out on not just this horse, but all the horses back there that don't get to this level. So, again, I know it's cliche, but I couldn't do it without everybody back there.
Tim Keefe, and you can follow Tim on Twitter and TLK Racing. And then I happened to meet Ben, the young guy who's handling the website as well, timkeeferacing.com. If you're interested in being in the Midwest, you can tell, you know, what kind of a partner you could have as a trainer in Tim Keefe. Tim, looking forward to Saratoga. Continued success.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Tim Keefe, everybody, really, when you see all the kinds of people from around the game, whether it, you know, the Mid-Atlantic people, and then some of the, you know, some of the pundits and other media types that, you know, that know Tim, you know, the Clancys especially, and certainly Maggie Wolfendale and Gabby Godet, you know, being from Maryland horsemen families, and they were just, I mean, as happy as anybody connected to the horse. Really fun. Let's take a break. We'll stick with a Mid-Atlantic theme for a few more minutes, because Andy Beyer is going to join us next. Johnny D to follow. Another Johnny D. John D. Gunther is going to join us. The breeder of Justify and Vino Rosso and more. We'll talk about his breeding career and ownership career. Plenty of horses that, in fact, he had horses running over the weekend in his name, and had other horses that he and daughter Tanya bred run over the weekend. But Justify's the one that they'll be, I don't want to say, they'll be that one of the ones they'll be remembered for. How about that? You don't want to say that things end here, because they don't. And looking forward to conversation with John. Graham Motion later, and Bob Baffert. Stay with us. Andy Beyer next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
This is Steve Cole, from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm a troubleman.
We're back at the races, 10 minutes or so to the top of the hour, and we've checked in before and after the Triple Crown events with Andy Beyer, and he joins us this morning for a little postscript to Belmont and to the Triple Crown. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Andy, I told everybody to start the show. When I said you were going to join us, I got your text yesterday, and I made me laugh. And you're really not one of the kinds of people you send LOLs to, but I did anyway.
Well, you know, I was very disappointed and disheartened, not only by the Belmont, but by this Triple Crown series. I mean, when Justified showed such brilliance in his early races. I mean, as a fan, I wanted to see him deliver, you know, like a blockbuster performance, somewhere in the Triple Crown, that confirmed that we're seeing a really great horse. But I'll tell you, anybody who thinks that beating Bravazo in a photo finish in the Preakness, and then getting a perfect trip and winning by less than 2 lengths over a kind of a joke horse like Gronkowski, you know, if this is a reflection of thoroughbred greatness, well, they're nuts. I mean, these were really ordinary performances, and I just expected better.
This is tough, and you know, you've got obviously the historic perspective and measuring stick clearly to evaluate these kinds of sequences and in this particular case, you know, a sweep of the classics. Is there a reason why, Andy? I mean, is it just, you know, these are the kinds of horses we have right now, and the parameters of the game have changed?
Well, I've got a theory to answer that question. I'll put it forth to you. First of all, I would say the figures are right. I know people when people see a big name horse run a bad figure, they say, "Oh, it must be a mistake in the figures." I'm really confident in the weak Preakness number of 97 and the Belmont of 101. So there's kind of, and these are numbers that, like in the 1990s, you wouldn't have smelled the winner's circle. Here's what I think is happening in racing. First of all, we know the Belmont itself, exclusive of its role in deciding the Triple Crown, has really become an anachronism in American racing. I mean, almost nobody in the U.S. is bred to go a mile and a half on the dirt. Trainers don't want to run their horses at a mile and a half on the dirt, and so it's really, we've seen over the last decade just a lot of fluky results. I mean, this is not a championship race. The Preakness has really been hurt by, the reluctance of trainers to run their horses back in 2 weeks after the Derby. I can't remember the last time the Preakness had a full field. I mean, this year, dominates a field of eight. I mean, the Preakness has just not been all that competitive a race, because of the 2 week turnaround. And I think that the modern vogue for running horses very sparingly, giving them lots of time between races, running 2-year-olds lightly, has had an impact on the whole series and on the Derby as well. I was just looking back this morning. I mean, horses like, Secretariat and Affirmed and Spectacular Bid, they ran made eight or nine starts as a 2-year-old. I mean, these horses came into the Derby, with lots of experience and seasoning of the sort that horses nowadays don't have. And, whereas I can understand the bad figures in the Belmont because of the distance. I mean, the figures have been significantly declined in the Derby in the last decade, and I think it's just because so many horses come in without that foundation of experience as 2-year-olds. I mean, they're lightly raced. They don't have the fitness to run good races. When you look at kind of the whole year of 3-year-old performances, this is what's happened is something that's happened in the Derby and the Triple Crown, like not overall. We're not producing worse 3-year-olds. If you look at in recent years, Arrogate runs 122 in the Travers later in the year. Gunrunner, 116 in the Clark at the end of his 3-year-old season. American Pharoah, who, was not a distinguished Triple Crown winner, in my opinion, finishes his career, with a 120 in the Breeders' Cup. So, figures haven't been declining. Our 3-year-olds are not worse. It's just that they are not ready, to deliver top performances in the Derby and the Triple Crown. I mean, until a decade ago, it took like usually a 109 or up, to win the Derby.
Right.
I mean, no horse since Big Brown has run a figure that high, and now they're all in the mid hundreds or low hundreds. So, that's my judgment. The Triple Crown is kind of no longer, a real meaningful test of greatness the way it used to be.
It's interesting, and then you could make an extension from that a horse unraced at 2 is really the, by your projection here, that's the really the ultimate example of the suggestion.
Right. You know, I think it is admirable that the Justify was able to do what he did, you know, with you know, without the two-year-old experience and so on, you know, that he kept on going, you know, through seven races in a short period of time. And I would expect him later in the year to blossom the, you know, the way some other three-year-olds have. I'd expect to see a great race of him out of him, you know, later in the year. But to say now that his winning the Triple Crown, you know, stamps him as a great horse. That's, you know, that's a concept that was relevant in the 1970s and 80s. I mean, this was there was no display of greatness at, this spring, in my opinion.
Well, and I'm glad you're leaving the door open for those greatness passport stamps to be added to his resume down the road.
Well, I mean, we saw how precocious he was in California. You know, when he started his career, a figure of 107 in the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, just with maturation, in the fall, you know, he projects to certainly be running in the 115 plus range. I think we'll see it, but as for the moment at least, I just feel very let down by this Triple Crown.
Well, we're never let down when we get a chance to talk to you on any topic, and it's always sobering to bring you on in these settings.
Well, if anybody on the rest of the program said, boy, Justify has put himself with the all-time greats, you just slap him down, Steve.
Well, that's going to include Baffert and his breeder, so I...
Okay.
I'll let you call Baffert and Gunther on that. Andy, tremendous. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Andy Beyer, you can't be it, Sestis. There's no agenda. There's no, he's not beholden to anybody. He's not, that's the beauty of Andy. And of course, also, you know, his counter measure, Steve Crist. That's why he's Andy Beyer. We'll take a break here. Top of the hour, and Johnny D standing by. And maybe Johnny's going to have to rework his wording for his description of what we saw on Saturday after that. I don't know. We'll see. Johnny D was at Mohican Sun. And he was holding court there and helping people win, I hope. And hope everybody did great. John Gunther, as I mentioned later in the show, bottom of the hour. And Graham Motion. Looking forward to talking to him about the Manhattan win. Got so many other, obviously, so many other things. Haven't even got to the Met Mile yet. And how about Sid Fernando? We told you on Wednesday that was his parting gift to everybody when he said, be Jersey. And you know, public, and I picked him second. I was hoping that Awesome Slew was going to get an ideal trip, but Be Jersey ran the race that some people speculated. Mind Your Biscuits was just unbelievable. I saw Chad Summers much later, not much later, but 2 hours later, and he you know, obviously, you can only be stoic in that setting. You get beat literally a flaring nostril in a Metropolitan handicap. That, you know, you don't know. I mean, you hope you're going to get another chance at that someplace down the road, but a tremendous effort by Mind Your Biscuits. Unbelievable. There was no, I mean, the rest of the field. How about, speaking of which, the Discreet Lover, 80 to 1 for Uriah St. Louis. Gets fourth. Limousine Liberal ran okay. He wasn't gonna beat Imperial Hint in the True North. So this was nice to get a placement in the Met. We'll talk more about that, and of course we'll get to Steve Asmussen probably tomorrow. So much. Brian Lynch going back the other day, and Disco Partner in the Jiper. We'll get as much as we can from Johnny next. Hour two at the races. Day one recapping Belmont Stakes and Justify's Triple Crown.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 888-938-4643.
Why is a credit